Spending time here at Issues Forum with the NAFB Washington Watch happening this week in D.C. And joining us now, Seeger Johans with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. It's so good to see you. How are you?
It's great to see you, Jesse. We are good and we are busy this week in Washington.
No doubt. Let's touch on the Farm Bill quick and we can get that out of the way here. I've said that a few times to people because we're talking right now, it's Monday afternoon, we're in a little bit of limbo with the Farm Bill because it's going through rules. We presume this is going to get a floor vote later this week. We're watching to see what happens with amendments and everything else. So your thoughts on where this Farm Bill conversation's at right now?
Well, you are right. Limbo, I think, is the word for it right now. We've got about a couple hundred amendments that have been filed. We've been chewing through those over the last couple days, checking for poison pills. The report language that accompanies the bill is about 1,600 pages. So there's just a huge amount of material right now for the Rules Committee to digest and hopefully get us towards a floor vote. Floor time in both the House and Senate is the most precious commodity in D.C. right now. There's barely any of it to be had. They've got a huge amount of stuff to get done, like FISA reauthorization. They're talking about a second reconciliation package, a third package, etc. So the Farm Bill is kind of having to fight for its spot here on the tarmac. But at the end of the day, Jesse, this is a really solid underlying bill that passed with bipartisan support out of the House Ag Committee last month. We're very supportive of the underlying bill. There's a lot of good things in there for cattle country. Our biggest problem right now that we're fighting is a huge number of animal activists motivated amendments to strip out the good Prop 12 language that we got included in that bill. That's something that we're whipping pretty hard against on the Hill right now.
And that's something, you bring up Prop 12. We hear a lot about that from our friends in the pork industry, but it's something that has an effect on the entire animal ag industry, Sigrid.
Absolutely. It has crossover to any livestock species because once that precedent is set, it's hard to claw back. It's dangerous to claw back. And that's why we've been taking an interest in this alongside with the folks in the hog industry. But, you know, I think cattle producers are very aware of the precedent this sets and why it's dangerous for them. There was actually a letter led by the NPPC that went to House leadership today that had more than, I think it was about 50 cattle groups at the end of the day on it, both at the state and county level. So this is something that our membership has really, you know, perked their ears up and paid attention to. I think it's really unfortunate that you have so many Republican and Democratic members, frankly, that are, you know, getting on these amendments to strip that language out, because it sends a really clear message back to cattle country that they care more about ballot proposition voters in California than they do the producers in their own district.
Staying on the topic of Capitol Hill, obviously if we get this Farm Bill through the House, then we got to move over to the Senate, and that'll be a lift there as well. And then I know we got the appropriations conversations we got to have too. So there's still a lot of things moving here on Capitol Hill related to agriculture.
Yeah, that's right. You know, in any given year, you only have a couple swings at the pinata in terms of what actually passes both chambers because of how gridlocked Congress is. This year, Farm Bill is definitely one of them. But the other one you hit on, Jesse, is appropriations. And in that process, there's a number of language priorities that we're going after pretty hard. Some of them we do every year, like banning the ESA listing of the sage grouse. Some of them are new this year. We're fighting pretty hard for language that would prevent any federal program like school lunch, DOD procurement, any dollars that are going to feed people at the federal level going towards the future purchase of cell cultured protein products. So that's someone that we're fighting for really hard. But then there's those money asks that we need as well. Money for EID tags, money for fighting the Asian longhorn tick and other animal health priorities.
Let's talk some of those animal health issues. You brought up the tick, and I know that's really been getting a lot of headlines here as of late. What's some of the latest surrounding the Asian longhorn tick?
Yeah, this is an invasive species that has spread incredibly quickly. It arrived in 2017, and now it's dominating states all over the East Coast, the Southeast, creeping into the Midwest here and the eastern edge of Kansas and Nebraska, Missouri, etc. And it's really concerning, Jesse, for two reasons. Number one, the tick is bad on its own. Like, having this thing, period, is not good. It's very small. It can reproduce asexually, so it spreads really, really fast. And it can drain the blood from smaller animals pretty darn quick. It is a nasty, nasty tick to have that's very hard to spot. But the other thing that makes it terrible is that it carries this disease called Tularia orientalis akita. And this disease, once an animal has it, once cattle have it, they have it for life. We cannot cure it, and currently we can't even treat it because we don't have a drug that treats the specific genotype that we have here in the United States. So this is a really big problem. It can cause anemia, you know, abortions, death in some cases, and it's easily mistaken for anaplasm, actually. So producers might think that they've, you know, don't even have it, and then before they know it, they're dealing with a big problem. So we are asking for some money from the federal government this year to sort of reinvigorate the surveillance network for this pest. We want to get that information flowing again, that data sharing between federal, state, and land grant partners. We want producers who have this to actually have somewhere to go to report it, because right now I'm getting a lot of anecdotal evidence about where this thing is, and we don't really have a good place to send that. But we want to get that back and running so that hopefully in the near future, in the next couple of years, there's a strong data set that drug makers can look at and then maybe get to work on a treatment.
All right. I want to wrap up with New World screwworm. Obviously, that's the other big issue that is out there for the cattle industry right now. And it's something that, you know, it's an ebb and flow conversation. We have the border closed. There's a lot of talk about when it's going to reopen, et cetera, the sterile fly facilities and more. So I guess from your perspective, where are we at with screwworm? What are the things that producers just need to be thinking about and keeping in mind right now?
Yeah, I think, you know, our national efforts to fight this thing are stronger today than they were a year ago, and we're just racing against the clock, frankly. That's what it comes down to. The closest case right now is about 62 miles south of the border in the Mexican state of Nuevo León. That is obviously not great. We don't love that, but what I can report that's optimistic is that we're better off on sterile insect production. We have a facility in Matapa, Chiapas, Mexico, that's coming online sometime this summer. That'll increase our supply of sterile flies to add to those $115 million that we're getting out of COPEG every week. And we also are making progress. We saw USDA break ground a couple weeks ago on the production part of that big facility in South Texas. So, you know, it's easy to say, oh, well, we should have done this, you know, years ago, but hindsight is 2020. And at the end of the day, we are making progress aggressively to increase that number of sterile flies. We also have more treatments today for this than we used to, and that's down to the lightning speed work that's happened over at FDA. But the thing I really want to zoom in on, Jesse, because you did mention, you know, being prepared on the farm, on the ranch, what should people be looking for? If you are in the Southern Plains or a border state, I think there's a couple things you can do now to get ready. One of them is super simple. Register a premise ID. Having a prem ID is something that your operation is going to need to move cattle out of an infested zone if we do get a case in the U.S., so that's really important, and it's an easy step that you can do now to save yourself some time. The second thing is go to either screwworm.gov or NCBA's website or any of the places that have resources on what this thing looks like and familiarize yourself with how to identify it. If you suspect that you have a case of screwworm, this is a reportable disease by law. You gotta put some gloves on to protect yourself. You gotta scrape some of those maggots out, put them in a tube, put them in rubbing alcohol, ideally, and then call that into your vet, and they will send it up the network of labs then to get that confirmed. But that is something that's really important to do. We want to know when we have this thing. We don't want to be shooting in the dark. And I really want to stress, Jesse, we've done a ton of work on that response playbook over the last couple months. We've worked hand in glove with USDA to make that thing flexible enough for continuity of business to be in place while still being aggressive and proactive against the disease. And I think we've gotten to a really good result there. So if you're in an infested zone, if you think you've got this on your cattle, don't be afraid to call it in. They're not going to come shut down your place. They're not going to come, you know, punish you. This is just about having the right information so we can control it. They're going to come with an epi questionnaire. They're going to come take a look at any dogs or cats you might have on your place, things like that, and then they're going to explain what you need to do to be able to move cattle off your operation. It's as simple as that. Just familiarize yourself with what it looks like, and make sure you're getting your information from a solid source.
Anything final you would add or reiterate for folks from the National Cattlemen's Beef Association right now?
We really appreciate how many folks we had fly in the other week for our legislative conference. We had a really strong turnout there, and those meetings and conversations definitely make a difference. What I would say on the heels of that and on the heels of the Farm Bill vote this week is go ahead and check the voting list after this passes. Go ahead and check the list of folks who voted in favor of some of those amendments to get rid of the Prop 12 language. Hold those members accountable because they work for you, and at the end of the day, it's a terrible message to cattle producers to strip that language out, and they should have to hear about that from you.
Sigrid, always good to chat with you. Thanks for a few minutes of time here at Washington Watch. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jesse.